Now, the problem with these ring pictures, and I owe you an apology. When I showed you that other Saturn picture and there was a moon down there, it was not Titan, it was Rhea. I confused these two pictures, and this one is Titan. Now, this one, you'll notice, is a little overexposed for Saturn. The reason for that was they wanted to expose the ring. And there you see the rings. And the first thing that, you know, immediately draws itself to your attention is they just don't look right. You don't see an A ring, B ring, a C ring. You seem to see these relatively narrow rings with these great big wide gaps in between them. What's going on? What's going on is that we are seeing the rings here in a lighting that we have never seen them from the Earth, at least with them spread out with this kind of visibility. We sort of see it at times, at certain times when they're edge on, but they are edge on then, and so they just look like a line, regular like a line. This is the first kind of observation we've ever had of this. And unfortunately, for purposes of easy public consumption of these pictures, every picture that Pioneer 11 took of Saturn happened to have the rings in this kind of lighting. The scientists were delighted with that, but it was kind of hard for reporters to explain what was going on in the public. Most, of course, didn't bother. What's happening is this. The spacecraft came in from north of the rings. The sun was shining on them from the south, from below. And you can see that the sun is shining on them from below with respect to this picture, because look where the shadow is, all right, on the planet. It's above where you see the rings. So what we are seeing is the rings in a backlit configuration. The sun is shining on them from underneath. Now, suppose that you had a scene on the Earth in which there was, you got a car, it's coming right towards you, okay? And its headlights are shining through fog at you, all right? And you have one headlight beam that is shining through the fog and coming right towards you. But the other one happens to hit a brick wall, okay? And then there is some other place where, say, there's no fog or there's no headlight beam or whatever. So imagine those three regions. You take a picture of that. Imagine those three regions of the picture. You will see light on the fog, because there is fog material that can scatter the light from the headlight forward to you. On the other hand, the brick wall, even though there's material there, the picture will appear black, because there is too much material, and the light cannot get through it. And see, the light is only coming from behind. So if it can't get all the way through the material, then you will see black. And in the region where there is no fog, you will also see black, simply because there's nothing to scatter the light. So do you get the picture? You see black in a picture like this. Either if there is no material, or very little material, as for example out here, or in places where there is so much material that the light cannot make it all the way through, as for example in here. The only places where you see light is places where there's a little bit of material, but not too much, so that it can scatter the light to you. Now, let's go in towards Saturn and see what we're observing. First of all, on the outside here, this is where the E-ring would be. You see that no material is there, or if there is material, there is too little for the imaging system to detect it. It may be, you know, that the E-ring is not a continuous band that goes all the way out. It may be that by luck, Pioneer 11 flew through a gap in it. That would be very nice. That means the Voyager 11 will be a Voyager 2 will be able to do the same thing. The first thing that you see here is the outer part of the A ring. And you will notice that there are places where it is denser than others. And in fact, am I getting this right? Yeah, the outer part of the this is the outer part of the A ring. And this is the inner part of the A-ring, this black thing, okay? So what's happening is in the outer part of the A-ring, there is enough material but not too much. In the inner part, there is too much material and blocks the light. The brightest thing on the entire picture is this, and that is Cassini's division. That is the one that in the Earth-based pictures appears as a black gap between the bright A-ring and the even brighter B-ring. What this discovers, in other words, is that there is material in Cassini's division.
which is not very much.
The B ring, you will recall, was the brightest of them all, therefore the densest of them all. In fact, when Saturn passes between the Earth and a star, the only place where you see the star totally disappear is when it's behind the B ring. Everywhere else, you can see the star way through the ring. It gets dimmed, of course, but you can see some of it.
The B ring, in places, cuts it off. Well, that big black gap there, what looks like a black gap, is in fact the B ring. Then you have the Crake ring, which is very, very bright in this picture. And then you have the supposed Garand gap and D ring, which Pioneer 11 was not able to image.
In other words, there's so little material there that it doesn't scatter enough light for the camera to see, or it doesn't exist. And we're not sure at this point which of them to believe.
The rings, well, the question was, what's the motion of the rings with respect to the rotation of Saturn? Saturn revolves from west, rotates rather, from west to east,
as do most planets.
The rings revolve from west to east,
so it's the same direction.
The inner part of the rings go around Saturn
faster than Saturn rotates.
The outer part of the rings go around Saturn slower than Saturn rotates.
The geosynchronous height, if I can use geo in a non-Earth context, is in the ring somewhere. I don't remember exactly where it is.
What determines the positions of these gaps, by the way, and the boundaries of the rings? Now, let's go to the better picture. Here's an Earth-based picture of Saturn, just to reorient you, okay? Remember, A ring, Cassini's division, B ring, C ring, maybe D ring, gap, perhaps, and E ring. Okay, let's go back to the Pioneer 11 picture. Inner part of A ring, the outer part is dark. The innermost part is dark. Cassini's division, B ring, dark. Crake ring, bright. D ring, not visible. E ring, not visible.
Jim, how about that one part of the
part of you? Oh, here? The edge of the picture.
That's all.
The edge of the scan. If you would like to know what's going on there, that's the edge of the print that I haven't made the slide from myself. Sorry. Newsweek had this picture on its cover, and I guess they didn't want to confuse people any more than they could avoid, so they painted in that part. They did a few other things that kind of faked it, too, but anyway. But I mean, you know, I'm not criticizing them for that. It produced a more realistic image than if they printed the raw data.
They had a much rawer picture than I have here, and the rings were practically invisible. So they simply had an artist airbrush them in, we think. Nobody admitted it, but that's what everybody thought around the restroom at the time.
And, you know, that's really honest. I mean,
it gives you a better impression of what it will eventually look like in the final pictures. So that's
not criticizing. Okay, what determines where these boundaries are is commensurabilities with moons. In other words, Mimas, for example, which is the innermost of the moons of Saturn, aside from this problem of what moons make just outside the
rings.
Mimas goes around Saturn with a particular length of time. If you have a body that went around Saturn at exactly half that length of time, it will be furthering, you know, for a circular orbit, the length of time it takes to go around a given planet depends on only one thing, and that is the radius of the circle. You tell me the radius, I will tell you the period. Very simple formula. And so you can figure out that a particle in this place where the Cassini division is would have exactly one half the orbital period of Mimas. What that means is, say Mimas is here and the particle is there. That's when they're closer together, right? Okay. Mimas, of course, is pulling that particle. Gravity is disturbing it. Ordinarily, that wouldn't matter. The next time they got made a close approach, maybe Mimas would be here and the three particles would be here, different points.
And so the poles average out.
But if you have exactly half, or exactly a third, or exactly two-thirds, or something like that, some simple fraction of the period of Mimas, Mimas goes around exactly once, the ring particle goes around exactly twice, and they're back in the same place. Or suppose it's two-thirds. Mimas goes around exactly three times, the ring particle goes around exactly twice, and they're in the same place, and so forth. The edges of the rings are determined by these various commensurabilities. I think it's fairly intuitive. It's fairly easy to understand why it is that there aren't going to be very many particles in the Cassini division, because Mimas keeps pulling them out of there. It is not as obvious why those commensurabilities serve as barriers which tend to prevent the flow of material in or toward Saturn or out or away from Saturn. We don't fully understand why that is, but we do know that the boundaries are, in fact, at places where there are simple commensurabilities with the orbital periods of several inner moons of Saturn. Okay, here is a picture from the cover of Science News, so ignore those green things. That was the boundary of the picture as they printed it, and this, in fact, is the edge of the magazine, and that's my copy stand. I haven't bothered to redo the picture because they're going to be so much better ones later on. But this is the best computer processed version I've seen so far, this particular picture. I want to show it to you. It shows the rings both silhouetted in space off the planet and silhouetted against the planet. And what we've got here, let's work from the outside this time. There is the Crake ring, there is the B ring, there is Cassini's division, and it begins the planet, it appears the hole. Okay? And the rings, which are lighted from behind by the Sun, are therefore much less bright, lighted from underneath by the Sun, are much less bright than Saturn, and so they appear as absorbing bands across the face of Saturn. And so here is the A ring, and you just don't see the A ring in this particular picture on the outside. There is a shadow of the ring system on the planet, and since the Sun is shining from underneath, the shadow is going to be upside down in sequence with respect to the ring. And so if we had A ring, Cassini's division, B ring, C ring, here we have shadow of the C ring, very faint that it's there, shadow of the B ring, the non-shadow, the light shining through Cassini's division, and finally the A ring. Here comes one of the big discoveries in Pioneer 11. First I want to show you this picture, which shows the rings in greater detail. This is the best one of all. And once again, we've got A ring with some structure. There's Encke's division. There's the proof that Encke's division exists. No, that's not it either. Encke's division is out there, and I don't think you can see it from where you're sitting. This is the innermost part of the A ring, which is dense. There is the, what is the matter with me? I haven't done this for long enough. I was right, that is Encke's division. Okay, there's Encke's division. There isn't even a finer one out here. All this is A ring. This is the innermost part of the A ring. This is Cassini's division, which is bright. This is the B ring. This is the Crake ring. And the distortion of the shape of the rings there is, of course, not real, and those are not two moons. I don't know what those are, but they're picture defects. Now, here comes a specially computer-processed version of this same picture in black and white, and one of the big Pioneer 11 discoveries, a new ring. You see it? Can people back see it? All right? This is the X ring. It is separated from the A ring, and there's the A ring, and there is Encke's division, and here's the innermost dense part of the A ring, and there's Cassini's division. It is separated from the outer edge of the A ring by a gap, which has been named the Pioneer Gap, or the Pioneer Division. And what's really weird about the A ring, about the F ring rather, is that it is very, very narrow. It is no more than 300 miles wide, and that's just determined by the resolution of the picture, maybe less than that.
Excuse me, where's the E-ring then?
No Pioneer 11 image shows the E-ring. And so you get into a real problem. The E-ring was observed by one method from Earth at a time when the rings were edge-on. Okay? And so what you did was you looked at the picture with a fancy gadget called a densitometer, and it was very, very... The rings were edge on, so here's a line where the rings are, the main rings are, and then that line stops, and you see some very faint material outside. You know what the structure is. You don't know how far in it goes. All you can measure is how far out it goes. And so it may be the F ring is, in fact, a concentration of the E ring. The E ring is observed from the Earth, but much, much further out, way farther out than this F ring did. In fact, it went out to a place within the inner moons. Somewhere around the orbit of Enceladus or Tethys, if I remember. But the G ring could be the same as the E ring. I haven't got the G ring yet, but that's what I'm going to. The F ring cannot, except it could be a concentration of the inner part. Well, the thing is, though, when the rings of Uranus were discovered, everybody went ape because they are unlike what we took to be the normal rings in the solar system, that is, these rings of Saturn, which are broad and separated by only narrow gaps. The rings of Uranus are very, very narrow, tens of miles, at most hundreds of miles in width, depending on which ring you're talking about. And everybody just went crazy, and still going crazy, trying to figure out what would channel the particles into this very, very narrow region. Well, now it turns out that Saturn has a Uranus-like ring in addition to the broad one. And so once again, each of these ring systems turns out to be very, very different from the others. Uranus has nothing but rings like this. Saturn has one of them. Why was the F ring never seen from Earth? I think this picture really kind of tells you. It's very faint. Probably it's not like the Uranus rings, which are made of some very dark rock particles. Probably it's made of ice the same as the rest of the ring particles in Saturn. But it's very faint because, probably not because the particles are dimmer, but because there are fewer of them. There is certainly, let's drop that. But it is like the Uranus rings in that it's so narrow. It's very faint, it's very narrow, that's why we didn't see it from Earth.
Why are the rings?
Well, okay, we got 2 minutes left. I have gone into that in earlier lectures. I'm sorry. I hate to do this to you, but, you know, I just can't. The bottom line is we don't know, to be honest. But I go through the theory. But there just isn't time. Yeah?
Is there a possibility
to find
more rings?
Sure. Always. You know? I mean, sorry? What's the importance of the rings? They're there. The planet has a magnetic field. The magnetic field does exert a drag force, as I mentioned, on the very smallest ring particles. That causes the ring particles to fall into the upper atmosphere of the planet. And they may be a minor source of dust in the upper atmosphere of the planet. Their biggest effect probably actually comes when the sun is at a higher angle above the ring plane than it is right now, and the shadow is much wider. Shadow is usually a lot wider than you've seen in these pioneer pictures. And they shadow a good part of the planet, you know, and that must have a very significant effect on the weather mechanisms of not only that region, but the whole surrounding region as well. And even with the Pioneer data, the thing is, the shadow is less wide, but therefore it is more concentrated. It's really dark. And with the Pioneer data, we may be able to get a handle on that. And then the Voyagers will come in different lighting conditions and see different widths of the shadows. And it should be very exciting to explain them, to see how it changes. But I think most astronomers, planetary astronomers, have to, you know, explain the importance of the rings. We'll talk about the rings themselves. I mean, they are there. They are major features of the solar system. We have to explain why they are there in the first place, which we can't do very, very well. We also have to explain why they have the characteristics they do. For example, why the gaps are where they are. And now there's a weirdness about why this one narrow ring up. You know? But I'd say the importance really is just that it means that Saturn has such a nice ring to it. Okay. Here is another major Pioneer 11 discovery, a moon. Now, at this point, things become very complicated. Remember I told you about Janus, and I told you some people think there is more than one Janus, in a sense. In other words, more than one moon just outside the ring. Some people don't believe in any of them. This may be Janus. It may be one of the hypothetical others, which has been called S11, S Roman numeral 11. Simply meaning the 11th moon discovered Saturn. Or it may be a totally new object. If it is a totally new object, then it is the first moon ever discovered by a spacecraft. From its brightness, if it is made of ice, as the other inner moons of Saturn seem to be, as the ring seem to be, it's about 200 miles across. And since we don't know what to call it, we've given a temporary designation. This is a new standard kind of designation that astronomers have been using for the last couple of years. 1979 S1, which means first moon of Saturn discovered, or we would use it if one was even suspected, in 1979. But 1979 S1 may be the same as Janus or S11, which in turn may be the same as each other, or none of them, or we know one of them exists. We know that exists. We got the picture. We don't know that Janus and S11 even exist. So there is at least one moon just outside the rings, there may be as many as four. Because, you see, Pioneer 11 discovered yet another moon, except that it may be the same one. Or it may be James. Or it may be SO11. 1979 S2 was discovered by Pioneer 11 as it flew in toward that close passage under the rings. Naturally, it was recording Jupiter's radiation belts, the high-energy protons and electrons. That's in Jupiter, I'm in Saturn, of course. Which, in a nutshell, I want to say much more about them than I'm going to have time for, in a nutshell, are very much less intense than those at Saturn. Very much less intense than those at Jupiter, for the simple reason that as soon as you get to the rings, they start absorbing the radiation belt particles in massive quantities. In fact, it's really impressive. You look at a graph of the intensity, the buildup of the radiation as you move in. In other words, number of particles per second that are hitting each cubic centimeter, each square centimeter of the spacecraft. And, you know, here you are moving into Saturn, builds up. Does it die for a while? Doesn't go to zero or anything like it, but it hollows out. And that is the G-ring. That's between the orbit due to absorption by the G-ring, which may be the same as the E-ring. And that's between the orbits of Rhea and Titan. As you go out through the moons, you have Janus and friends, Mimas, Enceladus, Tethys, Dione, Rhea. They're pretty closely spaced. And a big gap, and then Titan. Well, the G-ring is in that gap, okay? And then it begins building again, building. All of a sudden, you get to the point where you're at the same distance from Saturn as the edge of the A-ring. In other words, you're just below the A-ring. And wham! The particle count drops to zero. Like a guillotine. It's incredible. And it is literally the lowest particle environment the spacecraft was in since before it was launched. And the absorption of radiation belt material, which can travel around from outside the rings to inside the rings, and so sooner or later any given proton or electron will get absorbed. That absorption just cleans out the radiation belt, and what's left at any given time is only about as intense as that above the Earth. Which means that we will probably have human expeditions to Saturn before we have them to Jupiter. It's a much safer environment, even though it's quite so far away. I'm talking now about flybys. Or for that matter, lands on the moon. The radiation belts just are not nearly as intense. Well, then as the spacecraft was flying in, when it got to just about the same distance, all of a sudden, for 10 seconds, the radiation cut off and then came back on again. See, it was before it got to the rings yet, okay? So I shouldn't have said then, I'm sorry. As it was on the way into the rings, still getting the intense radiation, for 10 seconds it cut off, then turned back on again, then cut off, wham, when it got to the edge of the rings. Mind you, by the way, where it cut off was when the spacecraft got into the edge of the A-ring, not the F-ring. The F-ring does not show in the particles and fields data. So it's not dense. The G-ring shows, but the F-ring doesn't. The other thing that's interesting is if you get under Cassini's division, you might think that you pick up radiation again coming through the hole. You don't. Okay, so the interpretation of this 10-second cutoff is that the spacecraft had happened to fly immediately under a moon about 200 miles across, which acted as a shield and cut off the radiation. And in fact, on the way in, I didn't mention it, but there are dips in the radiation curve at the positions of several of the moons as well. So we know they do shield. But this is a perfect shield. That's not just a hole cut in the radiation belt by the moon. We are talking about 100% shield. Which means the spacecraft had to fly within a few hundred miles of that little bitty moon. And that is preposterous! What are the chances? If you have a moon only 200 miles across, all those hundreds of thousands of miles to move around in, that a spacecraft flown totally at random with respect to its position would happen to pass exactly under it. Well, I'll tell you what the chances are. They're 1 in 2,000. Nevertheless, nobody else can think of any good explanation for this. It's not that something happened to the particle detectors, by the way, because they all register the cutout at the same place, and a whole bunch of them. So, on the assumption that that is a moon, it is being called 1979 S2. But it may be the same as 1979 S1, or as Janus, or as S11, which in turn may be the same as each other, dot, dot, dot. You get the picture. So basically what we've got is we have at least one moon outside the rings of Saturn. At least we've got that far. We know now that Saturn has at least 10 moons total, but there may be 3 or even more others out there too. And in fact, there's a whole flock of them that make you feel a little bit better about that incredible mischance that Pioneer 11 flew right under one. See, the chances of 1 in 2,000 is only 1. But if they're, you know, they're throwing out like beads on a necklace, then your chances are obviously higher. They aren't throwing out like beads on a necklace, or we've been recording them as a separate ring, but it could be there's some happy medium there. Let's see what the next slide is. Yeah, let's play that. Yes? The F ring? Well, let's put the last shit on that. And I said no. Because it's not far enough out. Okay. Let me... there are a whole bunch of slides that I have to skip over here. I wanted to get... I'm sorry, people. We're just running out of time before we're running out of material. Carry these slides, these Venus slides, in every week since Venus, hoping to have enough time to tell you all that. And I haven't. This is what I was looking for, though. This is what I was doing with my hands. See, this is the actual graph of the amount of radiation as you flew in towards Saturn. And actually, this was the trajectory. This was an early graph, so a very firmly prepared graph. So, you know, it's not exactly horizontal. Time, you know, has very little effect, mainly because it's so close to the edge of the magnetic field region that is holding the rings anyway. And then you see this gap, this bulge, downward bulge. That's the G-ring right there, okay? And then Ray has a signature, Dione has a signature. Tessus is hardly visible, but look at what I'm telling you about. And then there's Janus, and there is 1979 M2, and then wham, the heating effect at the edge of the A-ring. So someone was telling me, I don't read newspapers, I don't watch television, so my information is more accurate, but it's also 2 weeks later. I understand that was in the newspaper today. I will, of course, now that I know it, I'll go out and buy a newspaper, but I just can't comment on it. I haven't read the article. Sorry about that. As to what I was told, though, this is what I was ending up for. I would do a lot of work for that chart. I want you to see it. You know, here you've got the names of them in order outward from the planets. There are their diameters in miles, and of course some of them are a lot better known than others. These are the diameters in miles shown as dots with a scale in which this is 1,000 miles, and for comparison there's Mercury, there's the Earth, Moon, there's the largest asteroid, Ceres, and there's the contiguous United States. There are the periods in days, there are the distances in miles with exactly 100 times bigger scale, smaller scale I mean, referring to this diagram over here. And what I want to show you is you have Mimas and Thetis, Tethys, Dione, Rhea, G-ring, seeing this big gap, Titan, Hyperion fairly close to it, huge gap. Now you're saying, could there be other rings? Yeah, first place I look is in there. Can't see that the particles in field state. Saturn's magnetic field doesn't go that far, so the particles don't go that far. And so you got to discover it some other way, for example, by flying through it and being hit by one. And then here is the Iapetus, and then you've got an enormous gap, and it's 4 times the size of this one, so I couldn't show it. And then finally you get out and you're at Phoebus. We are grossly out of time. What I'd like to do is leave this chart on for those of you who want to copy it, and meanwhile just, you know, hope that you enjoyed what I was able to say. Hope that you enjoyed. Curious enough about what I was not able to say to come back and see me next time when I say it then, and thank you very much.